All right, so Kuflam and Tess on the base, 7 lines from the bottom, yeah. So the Mishnah had said, we'd said in the Mishnah various things that you're allowed to do on Shabbos in terms of straining. We said in the first Mishnah of the Perek that you're not allowed to, according to the Chachamim, which is the Halacha, you're not allowed to set up the strainer, the wine strainer, over the barrel on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And on Shabbos, you're not allowed to pour wine, that is to say, to pour dregs of wine or whatever into the strainer and have them strain. But we said in the Mishnah, one of the things that you are allowed to do is you're allowed to strain wine through Sananas Hayayin Besudrin. You're allowed to strain wine on Shabbos through cloths. So we talked briefly yesterday that there's Machlokes Rishonim on this. Are we talking about when the wine is already fairly clear and it's at the point where most people would already drink it, and maybe just the person is filtering it through the cloths to get it extra clear-like, and that would be mutter. Even that, so in other words, the point is, even then to use the actual strainer would be also, but here where he's doing a shinui and using a cloth, and where anyway it really didn't need filtering, then it would be mutter. That's the Rambam. Or the Rashba understands that even if it's got some dregs in it, so that not necessarily would most people drink it. You're also not going to have that most people wouldn't drink it, otherwise, yeah, of course, it's still going to be burr. But if, let's say, it's half and half, the fact that you're using a sudr would be enough. The fact that you're using a cloth rather than a strainer would be enough of a shinui. In any case, Amr of Shimi Bar Achiya, Uvad Shalo Yaseh Guma. There is another condition involved. You can't make a depression in the cloth. Meaning, normally what you would do is if you're pouring wine, you're straining it or whatever through a cloth, you would normally stick your finger into the middle of it to make a depression in the middle, and that way the wine will go through there more than through the rest of it. On Shabbos, you can't do that. Rashi says two reasons. Number one, again, uvdin d'chol. If you do that, then you're doing it very much like you do on a weekday, and you might actually come to do the straining the way you do it on a weekday, using a mishameres. The other reason, Rashi says, is because you may come to squeeze out the cloth, and that would be schita, which is a tolda of the malacha of dosh. Okay. We said over kfifa mitzvahs, we said in the Mishnah, another thing you can use to strain the wine is a kfifa mitzvahs, a wicker basket, so a basket made out of, Rashi said, it strips from a palm tree or whatever. Anyway, again, because that's a shinui. Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav Ovad Shalo Yagbiya Mikauke Isha Shol Kli Tefach. But Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says in the name of Rav, there's another condition. You can't have, in this case, if you're going to do that, you can't have the bottom of the basket be a tefach or more above the bottom of the keli that you're straining into, because then you're making an oil. An oil, we said before, is defined as at least a tefach. In connection with Tumah B'Tahara, for example, we say an oil has to be a tefach by a tefach by a tefach. So here also we're saying the same thing. If the height of the oil is at least a tefach, then it's considered an oil. So therefore, you can't do that. So you can be using the basket, but you have to have the bottom of the basket fairly close to the bottom of the bottom of the container without a tefach between them. Whether that also applies when using a cloth is another question, another machlokas. Okay. Amar Rav. So Rav says in this connection, speaking of using cloths to cover or to strain or whatever wine, hai prunka, a prunka, which Rashi says is a piece of cloth that you put over a wine barrel to cover it. A palga de kuva shori, on Shabbos you would be allowed to put it covering half the barrel. A kule kuva also, but not covering the entire barrel. Now why is that? Rashi says, because if you covered the entire barrel with it, you would be making an oil. And we're back to the problem of making an oil aray on Shabbos. A number of Rishonim disagree on that with Rashi, because they say, how exactly is it making an oil? I mean, you're allowed to cover a container on Shabbos. So even Rashi might agree. I mean, Mefarshim talk about even Rashi might agree if you're not using a cloth, if let's say you're using a lid of a pot, then fine. But in any case, one explanation is that maybe Rashi is talking about only a very wide container where therefore it looks more like an oil. If we're talking about a container with a normal size width, then maybe Rashi would agree that that's not considered an oil. In any case, a number of the Mefarshim explain that actually it's not that's the distinction between a narrower container and a wider container. If it was wider, then it would be a problem. If it's a narrower, normal size container, then it's not then and then it's not such a big deal. Different explanation is, again, because if you put it over the whole container, then it looks more like a mishmeres, then it looks more like the wine strainer that we talked about in the first Mishnah of the Perek, where therefore, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and therefore this would be similar to that, and therefore it would also be also. Amar a Papa. A Papa says another din in this connection. A person should not stick tightly into the kuzni de chavisa. Rashi explains is the small little dipper or whatever that you use when you're pouring wine from a barrel. You don't always necessarily pour from the large barrel itself. It's too large to handle comfortably. So you take a little dipper or ladle or something and you use that to ladle out the wine into a smaller container. So that has that. That has sometimes a bit of a narrow opening, so don't stick even before Shabbos. That is a bunch of pieces of straw or wood or whatever in there to serve as sort of a makeshift strainer, such that when you use that to ladle out the wine, you're going to be straining the wine, because exactly that's the problem, is you're straining wine. Rashi says, Ein lechama sanenes gdoyla mizu. Mishum demechzi kemishameres, it looks like a mishameres. Now, it's not really a mishameres, because the fact is, the actual shmarim, the actual dregs of the wine, will get through such a thing, because not really. I mean, all you did is you stuck in some you know, pieces of straw, little chips of wood or whatever. It's not really going to be, it's only like a makeshift filter. But nevertheless, it will keep, for example, if you have, sometimes you have, aside from dregs in wine, which are the pieces of the grapes and grape skins and pits and whatever that are left over that got into the wine while you were pressing it, sometimes you have other things that are floating around in the wine also. For example, you can have what the Gemara calls in some places kmachim, which are like little bits of things that look like flour, which is Papastrous, it means some kind of mold or whatever. The point is, those kinds of things will be strained out with this kind of makeshift strainer, and therefore you're back to the problem of that you're doing a mishameres on Shabbos. Another din in this connection, Dvera Papa Shofu Shichra Mimona Lamona. In the household of Rav Papa, what they would do is they would pour off beer from one container to another. Shofu, Rashi explains, means pouring gently. In other words, like this, when you're pouring from one container to another, if you don't use a strainer or something, you're going to end up in the new container, the second container. You're going to end up with everything, including all the dregs and all the stuff floating in it and whatever that you had in the first one. But if you pour it off gently, then what you'll get is you'll get the heavy stuff, after all, sinks to the bottom. So if you pour it off gently, then you're going to get only the good stuff, the good beer in this case, and the dregs and whatever will stay on the bottom. And therefore you'll be rid of them. So they would do that. It's not considered burr because you're not being burr or anything. You're pouring off the liquid that's on the top and leaving the psoilus at the bottom and just not doing anything with it. But Rav Achmi Difti says to Ravina, that's all fine and good about pouring out the majority of the container, but don't you have at the end, when you're doing that, eventually you have, when you get to the bottom of the container, and you have all the dregs and all the psoilus and whatever at the bottom over there, then you have, it starts dripping out of there, and then you have, when you get to the point, when you're emptying out the first container, and you have drops coming out of that, isn't that burr at that point, that you have, you're selecting out the good beer, the drops of it that are coming out, from what's mixed with the psoilus, and from the psoilus that it's mixed with. So isn't that a problem? And the answer is Nitzotis, Lebeda Papa, Lo Shchichi. In Rav Papa's household, they didn't care about those droplets. Rav Papa himself actually was a brewer, as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, or we may get to today or tomorrow, we'll see. But we find in many places in Shas that Rav Papa was a brewer. He brewed beer, that was his parnasa. Agoy Sabach over here brings a half dozen places in the Gemara where we see that. So by him, they had lots of beer around all the time. They didn't care about the drops of beer that might be mixed in with the dregs. Once they got that far down in the container where you start having the dregs and the psoilus or whatever, they would just throw away the rest. They wouldn't bother continuing to pour out from it until drops start coming out. Also, besides that they brewed beer, also we find in some places where Papa was rich. So the same thing, in other words, little amounts like that didn't matter to them. So in that kind of situation, it would be allowed. But yes, if you're going to be pouring out to the point where you start getting out drops of the liquid that are being strained out of the stuff that's left, then yes, you would have a problem of butter. In this connection, by the way, the Alter Deva mentions the din. For example, let's say a fly falls into a drink or into soup or whatever on Shabbos. So you have, the Alter Rebbe explains, you have poskim, for example, the Taz, who say that what you're allowed to do is take a spoonful of the soup with the fly in it. So you can't take out the fly by itself. Sure, that would be burr. Although actually you have an early Achron, the Mahari Tatz, who says that maybe you're allowed to because he says maybe the fly is not really considered mixed in. Okay, even if we say that not, Taz says that fine, what you can do is you can take out the fly together with some of the liquid. The Alter Rebbe says, based on what we're saying over here, maybe not. Maybe you shouldn't do that either. What you could do is you could tilt the container and start pouring off the liquid until eventually the fly comes out with it. Which is similar to what we're saying over here in the Gemara about pouring off the beer until you get down to the bottom, until it starts getting to the point where you're getting drops out of it. We said in the Mishnah, v'nosnin beitzah b'msanenes, we said you're allowed to put an egg into a mustard strainer, where Rashi said two explanations. One is that you're doing it in order to help with the mustard. What you're doing is you put the egg into the mustard. So the mustard itself is in the strainer before Shabbos, let's say, because otherwise you can't put it in on Shabbos. But now, what you want to do is you want to start straining the mustard seeds from the pods or whatever that they came with, which Tosfos pointed out earlier is not considered burr because those pods or subin or whatever themselves are also edible. So it's not oichom and tosfos. But what you do is, and Rashi explained earlier, that you put in an egg with it, the egg yolk gets filtered through the strainer, and goes in with the mustard, the egg white stays on top. Again, it's not considered butter, first of all, because both parts of the egg are edible, and second of all, because the Gemara is going to say now that you're really only doing it for the color, to give the mustard a nice color, and therefore it's not really butter. It's not like you're not going to use the white for anything at all. The other explanation, Rashi said, is that you're not even straining mustard over here, you're straining the egg itself, you're using the mustard strainer to separate an egg white from an egg yolk. And again, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Tony Yaakov Kercha, Yaakov Kercha Torah Braisa, the reason is, because the only reason you're doing anything with the egg over here is to make a nice color, either in the mustard or in whatever food you're going to put the egg yolk into, and therefore, so it's not really taking solace from oichel. Okay. More dinim about mustard. Itmar, we said, chado shalosha me'erev Shabbos, if you needed mustard before Shabbos, I mean, you know, nowadays we don't know what all this is. I mean, we just buy our mustard prepackaged and pre-made in the store, but the idea would have been that when you're making, in those days, when you're making mustard, if you're making mustard from scratch, there's some kneading involved. You have this thick mixture of ground up mustard seeds or whatever, and it needs to be kneaded with water or vinegar or what have you. So suppose you kneaded it before Shabbos. Now fine, you can't knead it on Shabbos because that would be the malacha of losh. But lamacha, the next day, on Shabbos itself, amara, what can you do in order to make it that now you can eat it on the spot? Amara, mamacha b'kli avaloi b'yad. So Rav says, now what you can do is you can dissolve some more, you can dissolve it a little more with water or with wine, meaning that you pour some water or some wine in it, and you do it davka with a keli rather than with your hand. Now, obviously the idea is supposed to be that you're making a shinui. So fine, pouring in the liquid itself. So the idea is, the way we're looking at it over here, pouring in the liquid itself in and of itself is not going to be losh. And you actually have a machlokes rishonim on that question of whether if you have something where the malacha of losh applies to it, namely like this, you're talking about a thick mixture, are you actually allowed to pour in a liquid into it? We're going to be talking about that actually towards the very end of the Masechta, a couple of blot from the end. You actually have a machlokes tanoim on that subject. If we say that you're allowed to, then it means over here that you're allowed to. The on Shabbos itself, pour in the water or whatever. And then Rav is saying you stir it with a keli, like with a spoon or something. If you say that you're not allowed to, if you say that pouring liquid into a mixture like that itself counts as losh, then what it would mean is that the water or whatever had to have been poured in before Shabbos, and the question is just whether on Shabbos you're allowed to mix it, and Rav is saying you're allowed to mix it using a spoon or whatever. But the implication of what Rav is saying seems to be that mixing it by hand is the normal way of doing it, and mixing it with a spoon or whatever is not. Amar le Shmuel. So Shmuel says, Biyad, what do you mean? With the hand, you're allowed to do it on Shabbos. You're not allowed to. Otu ko yoimim amachu le biyad. Since when do you mix it by hand, by sticking in your hand into the mixture and mixing it around? On weekdays, you don't do that either. Macho chamorim. That would be what you do. If you want to feed this mustard mixture to animals, then you would stir it by hand. By putting in your actual hand into the container. If you're making it for people, you don't. You use a spoon. Elo, Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel says you're right. Actually, what it needs to be is the other way around. Memache biyad ve'en memache b'kli. You have to stir it by hand, not with a spoon, not with a keli, in order to make a shinui from the way you would normally on weekdays. So normally on weekdays you'll do it with a keli, says Shmuel. Exactly the opposite of Rav. Okay. Further on this, Itmar, so now we have another machlokas amiroyim on the subject. Rabbi Lozer omer echad zeh ve'echad zeh aser. Rabbi Lozer says either way, by hand or with a spoon or with a keli, would be aser. Rabbi Yechanan omer echad zeh ve'echad zeh moter. Rabbi Yechanan says that either way, stirring it by hand or with a spoon, would be moter. And Abaye v'Rabbi Damit Chavayu, ein halacha k'Rabbi Yechanan. The halacha is actually not like Rabbi Yechanan, meaning that you can't stir it either way. Now, eventually, what happened was that some of the Amoraim changed their minds. Rabbi Yechanan b'shitzei de Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yechanan ended up adopting Rabbi Lozer's opinion, which is that all of them are osir. Come Rabbi Lozer b'shitzei de Shmuel. Meanwhile, Rabbi Lozer, who was very machmer, came to accept Shmuel's opinion that you're not allowed to do it with a spoon, with a keli, but you're allowed to do it by hand. And now, once he changed his mind, Abaye v'od Rava, I'm going to try halacha to Rabbi Yechanan. Now, Abaye and Rava say that halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, because now that Rabbi Yechanan changed his mind and goes according to Rabbi Lozer's opinion that they're both osir, then Abaye and Rava are saying that's the actual halacha. That you wouldn't be allowed to mix this mustard mixture by hand or with a spoon. Although we're not finished, and in fact, we're not finished the discussion yet, but in fact, the Gemara tells us, Abaya's mother, or his foster mother, as we learned previously, made such a mixture for him on Shabbos, and he didn't eat it, because now, if he held that the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan, that you're not allowed to stir it on Shabbos, neither by hand nor with keli, then in that case, it was done. So, okay, we're not saying that she was Mechala Shabbos. She may not have known what Abaye and Rava had decided the halacha was, but nevertheless, he didn't eat it. On the other hand, similarly, Dvesu de Ze'era Abdelei L'Rabchia Ba'ashi, Ze'era's wife, no, Ze'iri, actually, it's really supposed to be, made such a mixture for Rabchia Ba'ashi, as we learned previously in the Masechta, that she had previously been married to Ze'iri, then Ze'iri passed away or divorced her, and then she remarried Rabchia Ba'ashi, who was actually one of Ze'iri's Talmidim. So she made such a mixture for Rabchia Ba'ashi on Shabbos, v'loyochol, and he didn't want to eat it either, for the same reason, because the halacha is that you can't stir it on Shabbos. Amrele, so she says to him, how could that be? L'rabach avidilei v'ochol, I made it for your Rebbe when I was still married to Ze'iri, and he ate it. V'atlai achlas, why are you not eating it? But he didn't answer, but because, as we're saying, he held that the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan's second opinion, which is Rabbi Elazar's first opinion that you're not allowed to mix it up on Shabbos. More on this, more opinions. Amar Rava Bar Shaba. So Rava Bar Shaba says, "Have a ka'imna kamei de Ravina. I was standing as a Talmud in front of Ravina. Ubachshile, I mixed for him on Shabbos a mustard mixture like this. Again, where it had been kneaded before Shabbos, and now it was just a matter of mixing in some more liquid in order to make it more edible. So I stirred it for him on Shabbos, the shufsa de tumah, with the middle stalk of a garlic bulb. In other words, he says, I did a further shinui. I didn't use my hand. I didn't use a keli. I used instead. I took the central stalk of a bulb of garlic and used that to stir the mixture. V'ochal and Ravina ate from that, showing that there is a way in which it's mutter to do it. Amar Mazutra, so now Mazutra says, the bottom line is, less hilchse kachol hani shmeitza. The halacha is actually not like a lot of the statements we just said. The halacha is rather as follows. Elak yihodja itmar. The halacha as far as this mustard is as follows. We say like this. Chardo shalosha me'erev Shabbos. If you needed the mustard mixture before Shabbos, lamacha memacha ben yad ben v'kli, then you are allowed on Shabbos to mix in more wine or water or whatever, and stir it whether by hand or with a kavi. So this is like what we said before. Originally, Rabbi Yochanan had said echad zeh ve'echad zeh mutter, and changed his mind. But now Mazutra is saying that actually the halacha is like that, like Rabbi Yochanan's original opinion, that you are allowed to do it either way. The nosim l'sechid dvash. Also, you would be allowed to put on it on Shabbos. You would be allowed to put honey into it. You have things that are honey mustard flavored. I guess we see that in the times of the Gemara, they also had that. That combination was a good combination that they liked. The lo yitroif, however, when you're mixing it, you shouldn't be beating it hard like you do, for example, when you're beating eggs. El ma'arev, you stir it gently. But if you're stirring gently, then you're allowed to, whether you're doing it by hand or with a keli. Another din, shachlayim, sheshochgan me'erev Shabbos. If you have shachlayim, which is a vegetable, in English it's called cress, they used to do the same kind of thing. They would grind them up. They would grind them up and mix them with water. So sheshochgan me'erev Shabbos, if you ground them up before Shabbos, then on the next day, on Shabbos, you're allowed to add oil or vinegar to them, like you do when you make salad dressing, for example. You can also add amita to the mixture, which we'll see soon in the Gemara what amita is. Again, you shouldn't beat it together hard like you would do on weekdays, but you can stir it together gently. And another din, shum shariskoi me'erev Shabbos, garlic that you crushed before Shabbos, lamacha noisim l'secha pulagrisin, then on Shabbos you're allowed to add beans or split beans to the mixture. And again, v'lo yishchek el ma'arev, again, you can't grind them up in there on Shabbos, but you could mix them all together, and now you have something that you can eat on Shabbos. A different girsa that some of the posts can bring, not v'lo yishchek, because obviously you can't crush them, you can't grind them on Shabbos, but rather v'lo yitroif, like we had in the previous ones, that you can't mix them together, you can't beat them together hard, but you can stir them together gently. And again, you can add amita to them in order to flavor it. So we have two things that you can add amita to. So the Gemara says, my amita. What is amita? And the answer is ninya. It means, we actually had this earlier in the Masechta as well. It means mint. Amar Abaya says, shma mina. You see from this discussion that we just had, hai ninya malya latachli. If you're having cress, and in those times it was a very popular thing to eat, then it's good to add mint to it. It gives it a nicer flavor. You actually have it. It's brought, the Gemara brings someplace that the people, I think, of Tzipori or someplace like that, were too poor sometimes to afford shachlayim for Shabbos. So instead, they would make a dish out of split beans and vinegar and call that shachlayim because it tasted a little bit like that. But we see that shachlayim, or tachli, as it's called in Aramaic, is a very popular kind of dish. It's a good spicy thing to eat look of a Shabbos, and therefore Abaya wants us to know what the ideal recipe for it is. That the ideal recipe for it involves putting in mint. Okay. We said in the mission of Oisin a Noimlin Meshabbos. We said another thing you're allowed to do on Shabbos is you're allowed to make a Noimlin. So we had a three-way machlokas about it in the Mishnah. The Tanakhama had said you're allowed to make it without any restrictions. You can make as much as you want. We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that you can make it only by the cup full on Shabbos, by the bottle full on Yom Tov, or by the barrel full on Chol HaMoed. And we had Rabbi Tzadik saying that you can make as much as you need for the number of guests that you have. So what is a Neumlin? So Tanan Abanan, Osin, a Neumlin for Shabbos. You're allowed on Shabbos to make a Neumlin, but in Osin Aluntis, but you're not allowed to make on Shabbos a different kind of mixture called Aluntis. The Ezri a Neumlin, the Ezri Aluntis. So what's a Neumlin, what's Aluntis? A Neumlin is Yain Udvash Upilpulin. A Neumlin is a mixture of wine, honey, and pepper. So it was a mixture that they would drink that they give, it gives the wine a nice flavor. It adds some sweetness and some sharpness to it. So that you're allowed to make on Shabbos. Aluntis, and yet what is Aluntis? Yayin Yoshan or Mayan Sulman Varfarsman is a mixture of old wine, clear water, and balsam. Now, why would you make such a thing? The Avdila Bemasusa Lameker. You make it to drink after a person has gone to the bathhouse, and in the bathhouse it's very, very hot. So you need something to cool yourself off, so it helps cool you off. So Rashi explains, therefore, so it's not the kind of thing that a person drinks when they're thirsty. A Neumlin would be like any regular wine where a person might drink it when they're thirsty. As opposed to Aluntis, a person is drinking specifically after they go to the bathhouse. Now, obviously, you can't bathe on Shabbos anyway, but even if you have one of the ways in which it's mutter to bathe on Shabbos, you can't be making Aluntis to drink on Shabbos because you're not using it for that purpose. You're just using it to cool off after the bathhouse. Therefore, it's like a refuah, and we've learned earlier in the Masechta that in general, you're not allowed to do refuah things on Shabbos. Interesting, by the way, the word aluntis we're going to have later on in the Masechta and a few blot, the word aluntis means a towel. So I guess maybe they use the word aluntis over here for this drink because it was like a towel. So it's one of the first things you want after you get out of the bath. You want a towel to dry yourself off, and you want this aluntis to cool yourself off. So maybe that's why they called it that. Amr of Yosef, so Rav Yosef says, I want you to know how effective this stuff is. Zimna chada olis bas ma'ukva lebe boni. One time I followed ma'ukva into the bathhouse. Ki nafki, and when I came out of the bathhouse, ashki and chamra chad kosa, they gave me one cup of this, of this aluntis to drink. By the way, it says over here, to ein mishpat ner mitzvah, that the Rambam writes that after you get out of the bathhouse, you should drink wine. If you're learning Perek Echad, if you haven't gotten to this yet, you're going too soon because it's in Hilchos Deis. Apparently the Rambam got that from our Gemara over here, which says that it's good to drink wine after you get out of the bathhouse. Anyway, so Rav Yosef is saying, so they gave me a cup of this aluntis stuff. The choshi mirbinsa de reishi vad tufra de kari. I felt the effect of it, the coldness of it, from the hair of my head down to the toenails on my feet. That's how effective it was. The ashki and kosa achrini. And Rav Yosef says, if they had given me another cup of it, havoi mistapina, I would have been afraid. Dima menakuli mischusa de alma de osi. That they might have, that maybe in Shemayim, they would take away as a result of that some of my schar in olam haba. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that because it was so effective at cooling me off that if I had had a second cup of it, it would have cooled me off so much that my life would have been in danger, and then I would have needed a nest to save me, and that would take away from my schus in Olam Haba. A different explanation is actually the other way around. It was so pleasurable that if I had another cup of it, it would have been so much pleasure in Olam Haza that it would have taken away something of what I'm going to get in Olam Haba. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef, in other words, the point is, wants us to know how effective this aluntis stuff is at cooling you off, and therefore why it's considered refuah, and therefore you can't make it on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Ma'ukva drank the stuff every day, and it didn't endanger his life, and it didn't give him such tremendous pleasure. The answer is, shiny ma'ukva to dashbe. It's different. Ma'ukva, rather, was used to drinking it. So after a while, you're used to something that doesn't have the same effect on you. But for Rabbi Yosef, it was a new experience, and therefore he felt the effect of it much more strongly. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, the Mishnah says, more dinim about preparing food on Shabbos. Excuse me. Ein shorin es achiltis beposhrin. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to soak chiltis in warm water. Chiltis is, Rashi says that in Arabic it has almost the same name, chiltish. It's a plant, it's an herb, which Rashi doesn't define it further. He just gives a French translation for it. But it's a very sharp and bad smelling herb. And it has a name in English. It's called asafoetida. But the point is that it's a kind of thing. You don't normally eat it because it tastes and smells very bad. But it's useful for refuah, as the Gemara is going to say later on. So now the normal way is you would soak it in warm water before you, if you need to eat it, if a person has a medical condition where he needs to eat that, then he would. So normally you would soak it in warm water. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Avon noisim, let's say chachoimetz, but you can put it into vinegar and drink it that way. Not drink it, but dip your food into it, because then at least you're, then at least it's something more like what healthy people, like what healthy people would eat as well. Okay, I mean, we'll see in the Gemara, what the problem is with soaking it in warm water on Shabbos. The Ein Sholin HaKoshinin, another din, you're not allowed to make the solus of Kaushinin float. Kaushinim are a type of beans. Normally they're eaten by animals. So what you do is you put a bunch of these kaushinim in a keli, you pour water over it, and it makes the psoilus, which is lighter than the beans, float to the top. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. V'loi shofinosan, you're also not allowed to rub them, to rub the beans on Shabbos to get the psoilus. Either way, whether you do it by covering it with water, or by rubbing them, either way, you're going to be doing a malacha of burr. Avol noisim l'secha kvara or l'secha kakala. What you can do, though, is if you're going to be bringing these animals, let's say, to an animal to eat, what you do is you put the beans into a sieve or into a basket, and you carry it over to where the animal needs it. So even if the psoilus falls out sometimes through the holes, that's not a problem, because it's dabashayim eskaben, you're not intending for that to happen, it's not psikresha, it's not necessarily going to happen, and therefore Reb Shimon at least would allow it. Some of the Mephoshim say that maybe even over here Reb Yehuda would allow it. Another din, in kovernas of kevin v'kvara, you're not allowed to sift straw with a sieve, and the reason why now why would you be sifting it is Rashi. So we have like this: you have when you have the straw that comes, from when you harvest grain or whatever, you have the straw left, which is useful for feeding to animals. Mixed in with the straw, though, you also have what Rashi calls zakan hashibolas, the beard of the stalk of grain. Meaning, if you look at a stalk of grain, you'll see you have the stalk on the bottom, the straw stalk that the grain kernels grow at the top of it. Then you have the grain kernels, and on top of each kernel, you have a hair that sticks out above it, which the whole, all of those hairs together look like a beard, and they're called zkan hashibolas. Now, those hairs are not really good for animal food. They're not really useful for anything except I guess as firewood. So therefore, if you have a mixture of straw and this is a kan hashibolas, these hairs, then you're going to want to remove the hairs in order to make the straw edible by animals. So you're not allowed to sift it on Shabbos. Because again, you've got the problem of boder. You're also not allowed to put it on a high place in order that this moitz should fly away, because Then you're doing the malacha of Zoda. We one of the 39 malachas is Zoda, which is exactly that. You're taking in the case of Zoda, you're taking the grain mixed with the straw and the shells and whatever, and throwing it up into the air so the wind carries away the lighter stuff and leaves the heavier stuff. Here it would be the same kind of thing. You'd want the wind to be carrying away the lighter pieces, the skan hashibolas, and leave the heavier pieces the straw, and you can't do that on Shabbos. Aval, no tola, but kvara, but what you can do is you can pick up the straw using a sieve and start carrying it over. And again, if this kan hashibolas falls out as you're walking, then that's not a problem, because it's not necessarily going to happen. But no son will say chaevos, and then you just put it into the animal's trough, which is going to eat out of. And that way, some of this kan hashibolas will fall out as you're going, and that's fine, because it's a double chain of a scaven, and it's not psikresha. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Iboyelahu shara mai. Now we're saying in the Mishnah you're not allowed to soak this chiltis, this sharp, smelly herb. You're not allowed to soak it on Shabbos in warm water. So iboyelahu shara mai. And if a person does do that, what happens? Is it an iser daraisa or is it an iser drabanan? Tirgamar of Acha Nashah Kamedrabyev, Rav Ada Nashah Kamedrabyev. So Rav Ada Nashah explains, standing in front of Rav Yosef, Shara Chayev Chatas, that it would actually be an Isur Daraisa, and if a person soaks the Schiltas on Shabbos, he would actually be Chayev Chatas, he'd be doing the Malacha. Amalei Abaya, so it would be a malacha of Bishol or of Losh or something like that. Amalei Abayas. Abayas says, what do you mean? How could you be chayav chatas for soaking something in warm water on Shabbos? Elamai after shorter umtzah b'maya. And if a person on Shabbos were to take a piece of meat, a piece of raw meat, umtzah usually means raw meat, and soak it in water on Shabbos, hachinami de mechayav, and say it's chayav, of course not. Just soaking something in water on Shabbos in and of itself is not a malacha. So Abaya says, no, it's like many other things in our perek that we're saying so far, that it's midrabanan, so you don't come to do things like you do things on weekdays. So again, uvdin dechoil, again, the chum are restricting certain things, even though they're not actually malachas, either because they might lead to malachas. For example, in this case, you might, once you're preparing it in the normal way by putting it in warm water, you might end up doing other malachas, such as grinding it up or actually cooking it or whatever. Or sometimes uvdin dechoyel is tircha yaseira, is an extra tircha, too much tircha that the Chum didn't want you to do on Shabbos. And sometimes uvdin dechoyel can also be where it itself is not a malacha, but it's similar to a malacha. Okay, so whatever it is, Abai is saying that's what the Mishnah is saying. So you can't do that, but you can put it in vinegar. You can put it in vinegar because that's enough of a shinui that it remotes it. To put it in warm water would be also because then it's over in the chol. You're doing like things like you do on Shabbos, like you do on weekdays. Okay. Now, we mentioned warm water. What about cold water? Bominate of Yechanan Merav Yanai. So of Yechanan asked Rav Yanai, who was his Rebbe, Mahu Lishwis as a chiltis betzonin. Are you allowed to soak this chiltis in cold water on Shabbos? Amalei Oster. So Rav Yanai tells him, no, it's Oster. He says, Rabbi Yechanan says, what do you mean? V'hanan t'nan ain shown as a chiltis b'poishrin. We're saying you're not allowed to soak it in warm water. Ha b'tzonin mutter, implying that if you do it in cold water, it would be mutter. Amalei, so Rabbi Yana answers him, Im Kain, if you're going to think like that, if you're going to think that you know how to explain the Mishnah just as well as I do, ma bein leave a loch, then what's the difference between me and you? The fact is, you have to realize I'm the Rebbe, you're the Talmud, and I know more than you. You should know Masnis in Yechidai. You should know our Mishnah is a Das Yachid. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, in Shonas Achiltis, loy b'chamin v'loy b'tzonin. You're not allowed to soak chiltis on Shabbos in hot water or in hot water or cold water. Rabbi Yosiyam b'chamin also b'tzonin mutter. And Rabbi Yossi says it's also in hot water, it's mutter in cold water. So our Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yana tells him that's not the actual halacha. Now, what does he mean with this expression, ma bein leave a loch? So on the face of it, he's saying, in other words, that Rashi says what it means is, if you're going to think that I don't know how to explain the Mishnah better than you, then what's the difference between me and you? So the Chavis Yor has a famous tshuva, we've talked about it before, where you find different places where the Chachamim use very sharp or sometimes even insulting expressions one to another, and how are they allowed to do that? You're not allowed to insult another Yid. So the Chavis Yor has a long tshuva about it, where he goes through a lot of these cases in the Gemara. So he says, in this case over here, first of all, listen, Rabbi Yanai is the Rebbe, Rabbi Yechanan is the Talmud, and we say that Amram writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah that if the Rebbe sees that his Talmudim are not paying attention or whatever, he sees that they're not applying themselves the way he should, then he's allowed to talk sharply to them. Zroik mora b'talmidim. So this could be an example of this, where Rabbi Yanai has to remind Rabbi Yochanan that after all, you don't know as much as you think you do. On the other hand, though, the Chavis Yoreh says, maybe you don't need to say that. Maybe you could say that just the opposite, actually. Rabbi Yana is saying it as kind of a compliment to Rabbi Yechanan. He's saying, you know what? If you're talking about logical analysis, you're just as good as I am. To be able to logically analyze things and come up with an answer, sure, you're just as good as I am. But you should realize that the only advantage I have over you is I have details about Mishnayos, like in this case, this fact that it's only a Das Yachid, which you don't know yet. Okay. Fine. Continues the Gemara. Lamai Avdilei. What do they use? What do they use chiltis for anyway? Liyukra deliba. When a person has heaviness of heart. So another person, like a person has chest pain or whatever. I once saw an explanation that it might be what's called in modern medicalese angina, which is angina. I don't know how it's pronounced. Whatever. Which is some kind of thing where the blood vessels near the heart are too narrow, and therefore the person feels pain. So that kind of thing. So chiltis helps for that. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Rav Acha bar Yosef chosh b'yukur deliver. Rav Acha bar Yosef once had this problem, this yukur deliver, angina, or whatever it is. Also, kamei de ma'ukva. So he came to ma'ukva to ask what to do. what would be the refuah for it? Amalei, so my Okva tells him, Zil Shossi Tlosa Tikli Chiltasa Vitlosa Yomi. What you need to do is you need to drink 3 gold pieces weight of Chiltas for 3 days. So in other words, either the idea is three gold pieces weight each day, total of 9, or 1 each day for a total of 3. Whatever it is, the point is he needs the treatment for 3 days. So the first 2 days were Thursday and Friday, and he took his medicine like he was supposed to. Then in the Shabbos morning, he went to ask at the Beis Medrash. Now it's Shabbos. You're usually not allowed to take refuah on Shabbos. So what's the din? So they told him, Tonad Ve'Rabacha, we learn in a yeshiva, and from the yeshiva, we learn in a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabacha. No problem. You can drink as much of it as you want on Shabbos. You can drink a kav of it, 2 kavim of it, and there's no problem. Because even though it's something that sick people drink for this yukra deliver, it's also something that healthy people sometimes drink as well. And we learned a rule earlier in the Masechta that when you have a food or a drink which people eat as a normal thing, then you're also allowed to use it on Shabbos even if it has refuah properties. So you're allowed to. So he says to the Chachamim in his Medrash, Lishtos Loikam Aboyali. You're right, I knew that already. I knew I'm allowed to drink it on Shabbos. That wasn't the question. Kikam Aboyali, Lishtos Mai. My question was, am I allowed to soak it on Shabbos to make it that I'll be able to drink it, where we said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to. So maybe you're not allowed to in order to start drinking it or taking it or whatever on Shabbos, but maybe once you've already been taking it and you need to continue the medicine, you need to continue the treatment, maybe then you're allowed to. So Amalei Hu Rav Chiya Ba'Avin, Vididi Hava Ovda. So Rav Chiya Ba'Avin says, such a thing once happened to me. I went and asked Rav Ada Ba'Ava, V'lo Hava B'Yodei. He didn't know the answer. So then he says, I went and asked Rav Huna. But Omar, and he said, Hochika Omar Rav. Rav said, what you can do on Shabbos is Shoda Betzonin or Waniach Bechama. What you can do is soak it in cold water on Shabbos and then put it out in the sun, and the sun will heat it up, and therefore, in effect, you have the effect of having put it in warm water or hot water on Shabbos without actually having done that. Because you've soaked it in cold water, and then you have it still wet from the water, and you put it out in the sun, and the sun heats up the water in it, and makes it, and then gives the effect as if you had soaked it in warm water to begin with. So the question is, command the shari. So who is that like? We just said before that we had a machlokas Rav Yosi. We just said before we had a machlokas Rav Yosi and the Chachamim, whether you're allowed to soak chiltus in cold water. So what do you mean? If you're telling me you're allowed to soak it in cold water, that's only according to Rav Yosi. The Chachamim would disagree, no? The answer is no. Afilu l'manda osar, even the Chachamim who said it's osar, hanimili heichad v'ishti klal. That's only if you didn't drink any of it before Shabbos, then you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos. Aval heicha, aval hocha, but over here, kivin to ishti, chamsho, male shabza, since he already took this chiltis on Thursday and on Friday, eloi shossi to Shabbos, if he doesn't drink it now on Shabbos, mistaken, then he's going to be in danger, and therefore we're going to allow him to do it. Now, obviously, we don't mean that his life is completely going to be in danger, then it's the koach nefesh, and then you could do anything, then there's no chiddush that you can soak it in cold water and put it out in the sun. We mean just that he would be very, very uncomfortable, or wouldn't amount to pikuach nefesh, but at least it would negate the effect of the treatment that he did till now. Which brings up an interesting point that we have nowadays. Nowadays, we don't drink chiltis, but we do have sometimes medicines that we have to take on an ongoing basis. For example, a person has antibiotics that they have to take for several days. Are they allowed to on Shabbos? So you actually have, as I saw, Rav Moshe says no. You don't necessarily have a heter, because unlike over here, that skipping the antibiotics for one day is not going to affect your health. On the other hand, Rav Shlomo Zalman says maybe you are allowed to, because after all, what's going to happen if you skip them for the one day? Fine, it's not going to make you sick again necessarily, but it's going to take longer for you to get better, and therefore it can be mutter. Another thing, Another thing, this next thing over here is going to be talking about denim with clothes on Shabbos. I'm not real clear what the connection of it is to the previous to the previous discussion. Maybe because you have the same kind of question. Maybe you have something where it's the same kind of question in Hilchos Shabbos whether you're allowed to do something or not. Something more starts off. The connection is actually probably because it's the same Rav Acha bar Yosef, actually the same Rav Acha bar Yosef who had Yukru Deliba and had this question about what to do with the Chilbos on Shabbos. This same Rav Acha bar Yosef is now also featuring in the next story. So he was old. He was walking along, leaning on the shoulder of Rav Nachman Yitzchak bar Achse, of Rav Nachman Yitzchak, who was his nephew. So he was walking, so Rav Nachman Yitzchak was younger, Rav Acha bar Yosef was older, and Rav Acha bar Yosef was leaning on Rav Nachman Yitzchak's shoulder as they're walking. Amalei, so he tells Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Ki matinim lebei Rav Safra, when we get to Rav Safra's house, Ailina, bring me in over there, because he couldn't walk by himself, but bring me in there because I want to ask him something. Ki matu, so they came to Rav Safra's house, Ailei, so Rav Nachman Yitzchak brought him in. Bamine and Rav Acha bar Yosef asks Rav Safra, Maul chaskuse kitnisa v'shabsa. Are you allowed to on Shabbos rub a linen shirt that was washed before Shabbos? The point is, Rashi says, when you, like this linen is one of those kinds of things where after you wash it and after you dry it, it gets kind of stiff. You have nowadays also, you have kind of, for example, towels, let's say, if you air dry them, they end up kind of stiff. So now what you do is, so you want to rub it between your hands in order to soften it up, so that's more comfortable to wear. Now that accomplishes that it softens it up, so now it's more comfortable to wear, but it also makes that when you rub it like that, it makes the white of the linen garment, it makes it whiter, it makes it a brighter white. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to rub this washed and dried ksonis made out of linen on Shabbos? The question is, do we say the main kavana in rubbing it is in order to soften it, to make it more flexible, and so it's more comfortable to wear, the shapur dummy, and then it would be perfectly fine to do that on Shabbos, or maybe the main purpose that a person would do that is to make it whiter, and then it would be osir, because then he's doing the malacha of malabin, of cleaning.
Is there an involvedness of Makam Patrish, because he's making it ready to wear and to be comfortable, he's sort of finishing off the malacha?
Obviously not, because the Gemara is saying it's mutter, so why is it not makabah patish? I guess it's because it is wearable even without doing this. It'll feel a little stiffer, that's all. I guess that's it. I mean, makabah patish is when you can't really use the thing for its intended purpose without that, but here you could. You could wear the ksonis without doing this kiskus. It's just more comfortable if you do. Anyway, so that's the question. What's the point? Now, it's not a matter of we ask the individual person, the ritual explains, because then each person, the answer is going to be different. What it means is, in other words, in general, what is, even if the person says, I'm doing it primarily for this purpose, can we say, though, that really the primary purpose is the other one? So what's the din? Safra answers him, the answer is that the main purpose of it is indeed to soften it up, the shapur dummy, and therefore it's perfectly fine to do that on Shabbos. Okay. So Rav Acha bar Yosef had his answer. Ki nafik, when he left Rav Safra's house, Amalei, so he asks, so Rav Nachman Yitzchak asks him, my ba mamine, Rebbe, what did you ask him? Apparently what it is, Rav Nachman Yitzchak had helped Rav Acha bar Yosef, his uncle, into the house. Then he had left the house, maybe so, because he figured maybe they want to talk about something private or whatever. And now he came to pick him up. So he wasn't there when they actually had this discussion. So now he's asking, what Shiloh did you want to ask him? Amalei, so it's Rav Acha bar Yosef says, I asked him this question. Maul chaskosi kitnisa b'shabza, are you allowed to rub this linen garment on Shabbos? But Amalei shapur dami, and he said, it's fine. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, why did you ask Dafka about a linen garment? But sudra. You could ask the same thing about a sudra, about a turban or whatever that you wear on your head. So why don't you ask about that? He says, Sudra, Loi Kamin Boili. He says, sort of, Achavay Yisuf said, I didn't have to ask about a Sudra. I knew the answer to that already. De Boi Men Avhuna Oposhetli. I already previously asked that by Avhuna, and he answered me. So the question is, okay, well, once you know the answer by the Sudra, but Tif Shidli Lamayim is Sudra, new, and once you have the answer by a Sudra, why didn't you automatically know that the same thing applies to a shirt? Amalei, instead of Achba Yisuf says, because there's a difference. Hosam Mechziki Eludi Chivra, because when it comes to the Sudra, you care much more about the whiteness, about the bright whiteness of it, so therefore there's much more reason to say that when you do that, when you're rubbing the Sudra between your hands after it was washed and dried, that even though, yes, there is a point that it does soften it up, but there is also the point, though, that you care more about the whiteness, and therefore that you actually have a Malacha of Malaben, Hochale Mechziki Eludi Chivra, whereas when it comes to Aksonis actually is usually an undershirt, so therefore you don't really care so much about the bright whiteness of it, and therefore there's more reason to say that maybe it's not that's not the primary purpose of it, and therefore in fact Rav Safra said that it's mutter. Okay. Next, Amar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says in this connection, speaking of this linen garment, this ksonis, hai kitinisa, this linen ksonis, what you do is, When you're hanging it up or spreading it out to dry, Rashi describes what you do is you put a stick, you put a stick into the sleeves of it. So sort of like nowadays, you would use a hanger. So in those days, you would use a stick or a piece of wood or a piece of reed or whatever for the purpose of and stick it in from one sleeve to the other. So now, what happens on Shabbos? Are you allowed to take it off that? If you're going to take the clothing off of the koneh, so not that you pick up the koneh and pull the beged off it, but the other way around, you're pulling the beged off the stick. Shori, then that would be mutter. Kanya mimenu also, but if you pull the stick out of it, that would be also because the stick is mukta, because the stick itself, it's not the kind of thing that you designated for the purpose of hanging clothes on it when you're drying. You use whatever stick you had available, and when you're done with it, you're going to put it back into, when you're done with that, you're going to just put it back into your stock of firewood and use it for firewood. So therefore it's mukta. It's mukta machnas gufay. So therefore you're not allowed to move the stick itself on Shabbos, but what you can do is you can take the clothing off the stick that it was on. Omar Rava, so Rava says, being kriti voyahu, if it wasn't just a regular stick, if it was a stick that's used by weavers, so then we learned earlier in the Masechta that such sticks are not necessarily mukta, mutter, then it would be mutter. So Rashi had learned earlier that actually those sticks are not even considered a klisha malach de la isser. Rashi learned that they're actually considered a klisha malach de la heter. We said before that other Rishonim disagree with that and say it is a klisha malach de la isser, but nevertheless, as usual, with a klisha malach de la isser, you're allowed to move it l'tzorach gufay or l'tzorach makaymay if you need the keli itself. And here, you need the keli itself because you need to get the shirt off it. So therefore, that would be allowed. Okay. Amar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says, a din, Speaking of mukta, hai kishsa de yarka, a bundle of vegetables, I chaz yalamaycho behema, or your yarka doesn't necessarily just mean vegetables, it means like greenery, so it means like little branches or whatever of trees. I chaz yalamaycho behema, if that bundle is something suitable to be eaten by animals, shori letatuli, then you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Be loy also, and if not, then it's also because it would be mukta because it doesn't have any use on Shabbos. The Rambam and some other Rishonim explain a little differently that what it means is actually we're talking about that not just any kind of vegetables, but ones that smell bad. So they're similar to the chiltis in our Mishnah. So even though they smell bad, some maybe naturally they smell bad, maybe they're thrown at the spoil, whatever it is, if at least they're still suitable, l'maychol behema, then they're not mukta, but otherwise they are. Amar of Chir Ba'ashi Amar Rav, Hai Talya de Bisra, a string or a stick of meat that Rashi describes. You have salted meat that you're hanging up on a stick or a string or whatever to dry. It's called a talia. So you'll have a rope or a string or something, and you'll have pieces of meat attached to it, tied onto it in different places to dry. That was salted, and now you're drying it. Shari l'tatuli, you're allowed to move that string on Shabbos. because conceivably you could eat the meat raw. You don't have to cook meat in order to eat it. You could eat it raw once it's already salted. And on the other hand, DeCavri also. But if it was the same kind of thing with fish, then it would be also because you can't eat raw fish. Nowadays, sushi, I guess, but I. Well, no, because you could. Like, you could eat raw meat, like, you may have something called steak tartar, which, yeah. But, anyway, that's according to Rashi, is what the Gemara means over here. Tosfos has a problem with that because, what do you mean? We learned earlier in the Masechta that salted fish you are able to eat, actually. Also, if the question is about the meat and the fish themselves, why mention the talia? Just talk about a piece of salted meat versus a piece of salted fish. Why talk about whether on the rope or on the string or whatever? So Tosfos instead says what we mean over here. Besides, also, for that and a few other reasons, Tosfos brings an explanation from the Aruch that we are actually talking about the string or the piece of wood itself. The point is, in other words, the string, if you have meat hanging on it to dry, so we're not even talking about salted meat, we're talking about completely raw meat. The point is, the string itself does not become so mucic, does not become so disgusting from having the meat hanging on it, therefore you're allowed to move it. On the other hand, one from fish becomes very filthy and disgusting, and therefore it's mukta machnas mius. A different way of looking at it that some Rishonim have is the one that you use for meat, conceivably you might use it for other purposes as well, related to the idea. It's not so mucic, so therefore you won't mind using it for something else as well. On the other hand, the one for fish is only going to be used either for that purpose, or just once you're done with it, you're not even going to ever reuse it for more fish. You're just going to throw it away with the firewood, and therefore, again, it's mukta machnas gufay. So according to Tosfos, the point is not so much the meat or the fish themselves. Those would be mukta, because you can't eat them on Shabbos. If the meat is not salted or the fish was not salted, you can't eat it on Shabbos. We're talking about the stick itself or the rope itself that you hang them on in order to dry. The question is whether that stick or rope is mukta on Shabbos. That was part of Tosfos's question on Rashi, is what are you saying over here? Fish that was salted and is being dried is not edible. You could eat salted fish. You could eat salted fish raw. Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's why the Rashi is saying the question is about the meat or the fish themselves, whether they're mukta. And Tosfos says the question is about the rope or the string or whatever, whether that's mukta. Okay. Amar Ktina. The Rav Katina says, now this next statement seems to be completely unrelated to everything we were talking about before, so we'll talk about in a second what it's doing over here. Amar Rav Katina, ha'omid be'emtza hamita, if a person stands in the middle of the bed, so you have a husband and wife's bed that they sleep on together, if a different person stands on the middle of that bed, ki'ilu oimid b'kreisa shal isha, it's as if he's standing on the woman's stomach, meaning it's going to lead him to hear her. He's going to be standing over there on this bed and thinking about what this couple does in that bed, and it's going to lead him to hear her, and therefore it's also. However, the Gemara says, v'lav milsehi, but that's not correct. You're not worried about that kind of hear her, and he would be allowed to. Now, what's this doing over here? So the Rashash explains that we find in various places in the Gemara where Rav Chista says things in the name of Rav Ktina. So therefore, maybe the Gemara stuck this in over here. We have a whole bunch of statements of Rav Chista. Now we had the one about we started with the one about the clothing that's on the hanger, whether you're allowed to move the hanger on Shabbos. Then we continued about a bundle of vegetables and about the fish or the meat or whatever. So now the Gemara would be continuing with another thing that Rav Chista said, but this one was in the name of Rav Ktina. We're also actually further down, shortly before the Mishnah, we're going to be learning about another thing that has to do with tznius between husband and wife, so maybe the Gemara stuck this in over here also as like an introduction to that. Okay. V'amar of Chista, bar bei rav de zovin yarka, if a yeshiva student buys vegetables, lizabin aricha, better he should buy the longest ones possible. Why? Kisha ki kisha, because they sell them, they sell each bundle is the same as the other, meaning how do the farmers or whoever decide how many vegetables to bundle up? They have standard lengths of rope, and they bundle up a bunch of vegetables with the rope. So each one sells for the same price. They have a standard size bundle of vegetables, and they sell each bundle for the same price. For urkum and mela. So if you buy a longer bundle, then you're getting more for free. You're getting more bang for your buck. Now, on one level, it's a very simple thing that Rav Chista is telling us. A yeshiva student is usually living on a tight budget, So therefore, Rav Chisda wants to give him consumer advice how to get the most for his money. There is also, though, the Chassam Sofer has a long explanation about this and a number of the next statements that we're saying in the Gemara, that they also refer to things as far as Midas Tovus. So he says that the vegetables represent humility, represent Anivus. So therefore, the idea is, like a Tamar Chacham should develop the sense of Anivus, so that, and then what can happen is Hashem will give him length, meaning in other words, a long time to be a prominent Tamar Chacham and be famous and still be able to show that trait of Anivus even in that condition. Like you have, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, who was honored Mikol Adam, and even when he's the leader of the Jewish people, still continued to be honored Mikol Adam. So Rav Chisda is advising the Talmud Chacham to develop that midah of Anivus, so that later on, even when he's in a high position, he still has more opportunity to use that midah. Similar, the Va'omer of Chisda, Barbe Rab Zovin Kanya, a young Talmud Chacham who is buying sticks for firewood or whatever, Lisbon Aricha, he should buy the longest ones he could find. Same reason, Tuna Kituna, each bundle of sticks sells for the same amount, because they just go according to the size of the bundle. And that way, the extra length, you get for free. So again, on one level, it's telling them how to maximize their money. On another level, Sam Sofer says that the sticks represent the midah of savlonus, so being patient and being yielding. As you have the famous Gemara in Tainus that says, La'olam yeheldim rach kona, a person should always be soft and yielding like a kona rather than hard and unyielding like a cedar tree. So therefore, so it represents that midah of patience and getting along. And same idea. In other words, a person, a Talmud Chacham, needs to develop that midah when he's young, so that even later on, when he's in a high position, he still has more opportunity to use that midah. V'amar Rav Chisda, Bar Bei Rab, L'Nefishalei Rifta, a young Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a lot of bread, Lo Leichu Yarka, shouldn't be eating vegetables, raw vegetables, Rashi says specifically, Mishum de Goru, because it stimulates his appetite. This is, after all, why we eat Tarpas on Pesach, is in order to stimulate the appetite for Matzah. Well, it's one reason anyway. So therefore, it's the same idea over here. If he eats these kinds of raw vegetables, it actually gives examples of certain kinds, for example, leeks or cress, then those kinds of things, it stimulate his appetite. Then he wants to eat a lot, and he doesn't have a lot what to eat. So therefore, better he shouldn't. V'omer Rav Chisda, Ano loy ba'ani yusi achle yarka v'loy ba'asi yusi achle yarka. So Rav Chisda says, I never ate vegetables like that, not when I was poor and not when I was rich. When I was poor, I didn't, because as we just said, it stimulates his appetite, and therefore he's going to want to eat more and he can't afford it. When I was rich, I also didn't eat these vegetables, because I thought to myself, instead of wherever in my stomach where the vegetables are going to go, better let meat and fish go in there instead. It'll be more nutritious. Among many explanations of this, there's something that's brought from the Arizal, and then various Achronim talk about different variations on this, is that when a Talmud Chacham eats food, he's also with that, we know, of course, he's being Mila, the sparks of Kedusha in it, and in particular, sometimes you have that in the vegetables or in the meat, there's this galgal in the neshama of a person. In particular, then, what you have is the neshama of a rosha is more likely to be nisgagel in a vegetable, whereas the neshama of a higher level tzaddik is, not necessarily a tzaddik, but whatever, of a higher level person is more likely to be in an animal. So therefore, Rav Chisda is saying, when I was poor, I didn't want to eat vegetables, because then, what's going to happen? I may be dragged, goru literally means to drag, I may be dragged down by the neshama of the rosha that's in that vegetable. And when I was rich, meaning not just rich for Gashmias, but more to the point, rich for Ruchnias, then I figured, better let me work with the higher level neshamas that are in the scowl and the meat and the fish, and work on being mavara of those rather than the vegetables. So there's that. There's also an interesting, there's a couple of other interesting ones also. The Maharal brings one explanation that the vegetables over here refer to Agadda. Agadda is very stimulating and very fascinating and everything, but Rav Chisda is saying, still, very nice, you know, but don't get focused too much on Agadda. It's more important that you need the meat and the fish of learning halacha, of learning the actual shakla v'talya of the Gemara. Okay. V'amar Rav Chisda, Bar Bei Rav, Dloin Efficialei Rifta, a young Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a lot of bread, Loi Livtza Batsui, he should not eat a little bit here and a little bit there, because then he never really gets full. Wait until he has more together at one time and then eat altogether. The Chassam Sofer says one of the meanings of this is also, it means don't, like, you have some people, like, they learn a little bit here, a little bit there in Gemara or in Halacha or whatever, and they never really focus on one topic to understand it thoroughly. Don't do that. Work on one Masechta, on one topic or whatever, and understand it inside and out. A young Talmud Chacham who doesn't have a lot of bread should not be the one to cut the bread for Hamotzi. Because you're supposed to give out generously to the people, and like this, you don't have. My time at the way of it, buying Yafa, because he's not going to be able to give. Buying Yafa, he's going to end up giving only tiny amounts to the people, and it's not right to do that. Rav Chista says in this connection, to begin with, in other words, when he was poor, I would not break bread for Hamotzi, ad shador yode b'kulimona, until I stuck my hands into the whole container that had the bread in it, and I found everything in it, I found as much as in it as I needed for my needs, for the meal, then I was sure that I have enough that I can make Hamotzi and I can give out b'ayin yofa. Okay, well, we'll stop over here. We'll continue more on Shabbos, Bez Hashem, with more statements of Rav Chista about what a person should and shouldn't do. Some of them are addressed to the young Talmid Chachamim. Some of them are addressed more generally to people, because, for example, the next ones are going to involve Baal Tashkis, and of course that applies to everybody equally. Okay, so tomorrow.